This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying tuned. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning together with Philip C. 7:35, Tuesday, the 9th of August. And as usual, in about 30 minutes, we're going to have the breakfast grill, and it's a trip back into nostalgia.
That's right. And if you, like my mother, if you reach home, you see my mum blaring the Cantonese talk shows. That's because they were listening to TVB, because that's a name synonymous with the golden age of Hong Kong entertainment, featuring a variety of cult classic TV series and Canto pop talents. But five decades on, has the demand for Cantonese language content dwindled? And how does it seek to rejuvenate its lineup and expand its talent pool? Keith Kam speaks to Desmond Chan, the general manager of TVB International, on The Breakfast Grill to talk about the challenges in finding talent and producing content while ensuring profits and maybe even discovering the next Choi and Fat in Malaysia.
I certainly hope so. That's all.
That could be me.
Okay, moving on, because that's in Fantasyland. That'll be happening after the 8 a.m. news bulletin. But in the meantime, let's turn our attention to an island which is no fantasy, and that is, of course, Singapore. It marks 57 years since independence in 1965. After being ejected from the Federation of Malaysia, this former British colony was confronted with severe unemployment, poor infrastructure and a housing shortage. Today, the country with a population of around 5 million is now one of the wealthiest in the world.
Meanwhile, the ruling People's Action Party has been in power since its independence. And although the party suffered its worst performance in 2020, though, it still kept 83 out of the 93 seats. But does this rapid development come with a strict control on free speech and politics? Because in a global press freedom ranking in 2022 by Reporters Without Borders, Singapore was placed at 139th place with a score of 44.23.
So it's a good time to take a look back and how this little red dot has transformed itself in the last 57 years, and perhaps what does the future hold for it. For some answers, we speak to Dr. Oh Isan, Principal Advisor at the Pacific Research Centre. Good morning, Isan. Always good to speak to you. Now, we know Singapore celebrates, you know, many years of independence. What are the reasons for this city-state to allow it to become this bastion of free enterprise and one of the countries in Asia relatively untainted by allegations of corruption?
Well, I happen to be in Singapore today, and I could see indeed with my clear eyes Singapore's achievements to date, mostly achieved indeed by its clear-eyed vision of how this country should go forward, and not by any fantasy. As you mentioned, there were lacks of resources and so on. But I think above all, the pragmatism to sort of solve the problems for livelihoods, and then on that basis to expand Singapore's horizons, the rules of laws, as well as long-term plannings. I think all this would play into the equation for Singapore to become a successful country as it is today. Yeah.
Let's expand the discussion on long-term planning, because I always wonder with Singapore, with its constraints, right? What is its long-term economic plan like, right? In view that in its surrounding nations like Vietnam, Indonesia, and such, they're growing at a much rapid pace. How does Singapore repivot its economy for the longer term?
Well, number one, Singapore has always sort of situated itself as one of those indispensable hubs, not only for economic interactions, but even, you know, for people like me, for intellectual discourse. And nowadays, of course, Singapore's economy is rapidly marching into that of high technology, of green technology, of biotechnology, and so on. It's perhaps no longer, for example, still in those manufacturing mode. So at any one point, again, Singapore would plan for its future. Yeah.
Okay, and if we look at the leadership of Singapore, it's very much tied to the Lee name, the Lee family. But it looks this time that Lawrence Wong looks on track to be Singapore's fourth prime minister. Is this choice by Lee Hsien Loong rather unusual one? And what do you think his policy stance and leadership style will be?
Well, Singapore's choice of leadership successors typically are by, shall we say, majority votes of their cabinet colleagues. That was the case with Goh Chok Tong, with Lee Hsien Loong, and now with Lawrence Wong. Frankly speaking, I think a lot of us are still trying to indeed observe Lawrence more closely, even though he has been minister for a number of years, to see what eventually his leadership would emerge. But Singapore, in a sense, they have this sort of very long-standing features. As I mentioned before, in fact, that they would plan for their future rather collectively. And they will uphold this so-called integrity, namely anti-corruption, and of course, the rule of law. Yeah,
and the sense I get is that the way they tend to engage is very much on a collective basis. Even the description of this group being called the fourth generation leaders, 4G, right? Needing to engage Singapore for this Forward Singapore exercise to update their social compact. So, what do you expect to see with this updated social compact? What issues are they trying to solve here?
But Singapore, it's, of course, as I said, a hub to the rest of the world for this region. And inevitably, of course, there will be a lot of this, shall we say, more liberal discourses. For example, nowadays, Singapore, I think as a nation, they're grappling with, whether they should embrace more colorful and more diverse description of gender identity. I think that is an ongoing conversation. But if Singapore were to be more embracive of these different types of gender identity, it will set an example for the rest of the region as well. So this is how they interact with the rest of the world and not just with themselves and with the region. Yeah.
Okay, Isan, I'm very curious, what do you think are Singapore's main structural issues, actually? What are the challenges that lie ahead for them?
Well, I think Singapore would have to sort of get used to this sort of very rapid growth and then sometimes followed by very rapid decline in its economy. As we saw, actually, over the last decades, sometimes Singapore would have enormous growth of up to, let's say, 15%. But then the next year, it might have economic contraction up to 5% and so on. So they have to, number one, get used to it. And number two, how to make sure this sort of enormous wealth is enjoyed by all strata of society. I think that also remains the challenge.
So as an open country that basically is very connected to the world, has two big challenges, right? First big challenge is you see this volatility of how your fortunes are interlinked with the globe. But the second broader issue is that it very much makes you think about your identity a bit more, right? It's very nebulous. It's not very crystal, isn't it? Because it has to infuse all these elements. So how does Singapore navigate its own identity going forward that's distinctive to itself?
Well, I think number one, Singapore as a nation, it's of course a very young one, barely over half a century. I think equal treatment under law, I think that's a very important concept for Singaporeans. No matter ethnic backgrounds, religions, and so on, you are all treated equally. You are primarily using the major lingua franca of the world, namely English. And they make sure that no one single community is above the other. And I think that makes Singapore or Singaporeans feel like they belong to this new country. Yeah.
Okay, so you've touched about the fact that it's a multiracial and multi-religious society. But I think at some point, it has also meant that controversial and sensitive topics are treated with kid gloves. Do you think it's time for Singapore to be more open to discuss and confront sensitive issues?
Well, for those of us who are outsiders, we will of course think so, right? But I think they are very careful because they want to preserve this kind of, number one, social cohesion, and number two, to make sure that the social fabric doesn't, in a sense, unravel due to some of these, as you say, insensitive remarks and so on. Yeah.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Dr. Oh Ee Sun, Principal Advisor at the Pacific Research Center, giving us the reasons why Singapore has really done so well in the last 57 years.
I just wonder whether we would have the LCS scandal in Singapore.
Unlikely.
You know, we just had two podcasts of varying, differing fortunes in my view. Perhaps the first one explaining why Singapore is way ahead, because they would never have such scandals like that there, would they?
I wouldn't say never, but unlikely. I mean, they are known to have a relatively, in terms of you look at the history, corruption cases are very minimal there. There are no shades of grey when it comes to the Singapore government. But it's not to say that they are not without their structural issues, right?
Sure.
One of which is that I think question marks over the equality within society. So it's prosperous. But is there common prosperity among everybody? Do people feel left out in this meritocratic society?
One could argue that's also the conversation that we should be having in Malaysia. It's just that other things overshadow it.
Yeah. I mean, the question for us is really, as a country, Malaysia, what is our future? How are we going to go to the next level, right? How are we moving up the value chain? These are the conversations every country must have with itself.
Until you get the basics right, like integrity and honesty and justice.
Exactly. And equality for all. Up next, we'll be speaking to PAC Chairman Wong Kar-wah on their report on those missing ships. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.